I'd like to welcome back to Fade to Black, the one and only Mr. David Wilcock. David, good evening.
Hey, thank you, Jimmy. It's good to be back.
It's always great to hear your voice, my friend. And, you know, before we talk about music, let me say this. You have been writing, talking, speaking, video, multimedia, internet, and so forth for a couple of decades now. And have you ever, in the last 20 years, ever seen activity on our planet like we do today?
It definitely feels like we're culminating, that all this work that's been laid, all the groundwork that's been laid is really, really heading to something. And we're not quite there yet, but it's so close. And it is very exciting. It really feels like we're right on the precipice of probably the greatest transformation in our whole civilization's history.
I look back and I think about some of the movements throughout history, right? Theosophical Society, Blavatsky, 1900, 1890, and some of the secret societies that were, and well, when I say society, groups that were getting together talking about transformation and contact and all of these and went all the way through you know, the 1970s, you know, 1980s, and these different movements that have happened. But and all those were exciting, and those were people that were awakening, and I get all of that. But today you can almost feel it, you can see it. It's very exciting, but I'm almost nervous too with that excitement. Do you feel the same thing where you can kind of almost touch it, right?
It does feel like we're very close. You got to remember, as far as the UFO disclosure, I was actually at the 2001 Disclosure Project event where 39 witnesses came forward.
Right.
At the time, I was only able to get in because I'd been on Art Bell a couple times, so I was technically a VIP. But that career break had only happened for me a few months earlier, starting in around, I guess, March 2001. I'd already been working online for 5 years and really hadn't gotten very far until that happened. And back then, we were... And I say we because, you know, I was hanging out with Dr. Greer and hearing what he was saying. And it was like half the planet was aware of what we were doing. And it was the largest streaming event in the history of the National Press Club at the time. It broke the streaming server.
Right.
But, you know, we all thought, everybody in that room, because I was there with, you know, congressional aides and congressmen, all these other VIPs. And of course, the 39 insiders. I actually sat right behind Helen Thomas, who's the classic female journalist who interviewed every president, I think, since Nixon, or maybe even Kennedy. And we all thought it was going to happen right then. You know, how could you stop this media blitzkrieg of 39 people coming forward in the press club? And then here we are. 17 years later, right? And it still hasn't quite happened yet. So I think it's difficult for people when they've maybe not been in this as long as I have you have to be able to detach from the wanting immediate gratification. And you have to be willing to look at the victories that are happening along the way. And understand that much in the same way as any revolution when you study history, revolutions typically, when there is a coup kind of situation, which is really what this is, it's a coup over the deep state by essentially the military of the U.S. and many other countries. Once that happens, it's going to be really fast. And so, yeah, we've been waiting 17 years just since that event. But it's gonna go like lightning once it happens. And there's so many indications now that this is really about to break. And I'll be happy to enunciate those in detail, but I don't want to just do monologues here.
Yeah, you're good at the monologue. I know. I can just go. Well, see, the thing is, that's what's great, David, is I can just kick back. Yeah, let me tell everybody. I'm not going to tell them about what the conversation was about, but David and I were talking. I don't know. It was over the weekend, and we were talking over the weekend. We had a... How long was that phone call, David? 2 hours? 3 hours?
Yeah, I think 2 hours is right.
I spoke, maybe three. I spoke for 5 minutes.
Oh, come on, dude. But, I had to ventilate some
things. I know. And but
I told you, thank you for listening.
Yes, yes.
And I said, please allow me to go into these subjects, you know? Look, this is a war, and it's frustrating.
That's right, and
you and I are trench buddies.
Bro. Yes, that's right. And see, this is what I want the audience to understand. David speaks often, but even in private, that concern is real. Right? You weren't speaking to 10,000 or 100,000 people or whatever. You were just speaking to me. And your concern is real. And I think everybody needs to appreciate that about you. They think that you're posting on Divine Cosmos, or you're doing your shows over at Gaia or Ancient Aliens, or speaking at conferences, and that's all that you do. Your concern is real. Even privately, these conversations are what you do. And most people don't know that side of you. You know, and so there you go. I mean, I mean,
anybody who tries to say that I'm in it for the money, if I was in it for the money, I'd have a big product line on my website. I'd be doing conferences every month. I'd charge $1,000 a ticket. Yeah, I don't need to do that. I'm an artist, and I just want to do my art and have enough that I can be comfortable and not be worried about, you know, eating and paying the bills.
Right, right.
Yeah, I'm not a commercially driven person, and that's why it's kind of sad and hilarious when you see these attacks online, because I've probably been doing this just about as long as anybody. Linda Moulton Howe's been doing it longer than me, but as far as anybody visible right now, I'm definitely one of the oldest veterans. You know, even though I'm only 45, it feels like a lot longer than that.
Well, you look 55, so you got that going for you. Let me ask you this, David.
Hey, wait. I'm gonna finish the thought, okay?
Okay, go ahead.
The two things that everybody accuses us of, and us meaning this entire community, is ego and money,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
So the problem with the ego thing is, when I speak about things, I've been doing research on this my entire life. And I, for most of my life, researched 14 hours a day. I didn't watch TV. I didn't have friends. I didn't go out to eat dinner because I didn't have any money. All I did is sit and read books and read the internet and study. And so when people say, well, you know, he's so confident, the confidence comes from the fact that I've done the work. And so the ego thing, yes, in the past, I think all of us, as we fight this war, we would like to see our work get more recognition than it does. And when it doesn't, we might tend to want to inflate ourselves and say things to laud our qualifications, to boost up our persona so that we'll get more attention. I did do some of that stuff in the past. I really don't try to do that now. I don't need to prove anything. You know, if people get upset, I'm sorry that I'm not more active. I do kind of feel like John Lennon. I'm just sitting here watching the wheels go round and round.
Right.
You know, that song was really him coming forward and apologizing for taking a few years off and not doing any music. And then he was getting ready to become really politically active, and look at what happened right after that.
Right. Right. Boom. Right. Yeah.
So that's part of the problem is, you know, the people that are attacking us online, and I'm speaking to them because they're going to hear this show, okay? You guys have to understand, first of all, nobody's getting rich on this. Second of all, I don't need to be famous. I don't really want to be famous. That's why I moved into the middle of nowhere, so that I don't have to deal with that stuff as much. I'm not in this for anything except that I want this whole planet to be safe and to be prosperous and to move into a truly educated, enlightened era, because we're not there now. It's just insane, the stuff that we're seeing. And a lot of people, if you don't really understand the spiritual side of this, it would appear that it's getting worse. So there's my diatribe.
Well, well said, David. Well said. And when we look at and I'm speaking about the community, but also yourself directly. When we look at this disclosure that appears to be happening and is possibly, I'm just saying possibly or allegedly, coming directly from the Pentagon, and then we have the other elements of disclosure, like what Bassett is doing or what Greer is doing or others out there, that it's coming forward, but nobody has the same view on it. Who do we trust here, or do we trust nobody?
I learned a long time ago that I don't have any heroes. I'm not expecting to find a hero. I'm not expecting to find somebody to look up to. And I think the fact that most of us try to do that is actually a weakness. I don't want to be seen as a hero. I'm just an ordinary guy. People hang out with me, and I'll talk about stuff that has nothing to do with UFOs or consciousness. If they ask me, I'll talk about it. I don't get all wrapped up in weird metaphysical mumbo jumbo. I try to ground everything in science. So that's the gift. That's the gift of what you're doing, Jimmy, is it's the free will. Everybody has the option to decide what they want to believe. And so I'm not asking people to take my word for it. All I'm saying is that I will always do the very best that I can to provide you with the truth, to the best of my knowledge, to the best of my understanding. If anything that I am working on seems to get picked apart and it's credible, I will acknowledge that. I don't run away from people doing accurate skepticism. What is upsetting is that instead of people doing a skeptical rebuttal of the actual data, they tend to just descend into character assassination. You know, I gain some weight, and then they say, oh my God, David is going to get diabetes type 2, and he's eating himself to death, right? And it's like I gained maybe 10 pounds. It's ridiculous, the stuff that happens. I'm sure you've seen plenty of this.
Oh, yeah.
It's crazy.
Oh, yeah. And this is what I find a little bizarre, and I'm trying to get through this, which is the deep state, the military-industrial complex, the Pentagon, the White House, NSA, CIA, doesn't matter who you speak about here, but they have done everything they can to humiliate and discredit and embarrass anybody inside of the UFO community. And now,
in the past,
but let me finish now. My turn to finish.
Go ahead.
Is this now we are being asked to embrace members of the Pentagon and the Department of Defense as a messiah type figure? That
right.
and it's I have a problem with that, and so does the UFO community in general. But,
absolutely.
But what do we do with this? I mean, it's I have issues with that. I need more time and space before I feel comfortable in accepting somebody or something or a project that worked in counterintelligence, right? I mean, I have issues with that. What do you think is actually going on?
Well, you were the one that tipped me off about the hot air balloon photo.
Right.
That was coming out from To the Stars Academy of Arts and Science, which is Tom DeLonge's disclosure initiative. Now, I don't think he knew that. I can't imagine that a guy like him would put his career and his personal finances on the line and then come forward with something that had that kind of a flaw in it. But I do think if he is listening, and he very well may be, you got to step back, dude, and you got to think, did the people that gave you that information know that it was flawed, and did they lie to you? Because if that's true, then there could be other reasons for why they contacted you and what they're really trying to do than what they told you. And when you're dealing with people from the CIA, of which several of these people are,
mm-hmm.
you have to look beneath the surface. And that's what we all do. That's why we're conspiracy theorists, right?
Right, right.
Everything's a conspiracy.
Everything.
So we can't just trust this. And the fact is, as I said to you in our conversation yesterday, Jimmy, all somebody has to do is fire one shot in a battle, and now they've compromised their location. Now you know where they are. They can't fire another one without everybody triangulating on them, and they'll be gone. So in a sense, it's kind of amazing that you, as far as I know, you were the one that figured out that hot air balloon thing first. And you're the first person I heard from about it. You called me on the phone. I couldn't believe it because I wanted this thing to be great. I wanted this thing to be clean and, okay, the government is finally coming forward. They're finally telling us the truth. But there's something off about it. There's something, somebody was lying, right? And if I was going to be an attorney and we're prosecuting a case here, this is probable cause for there to be an ulterior motive. And then the question is, cui bono, who benefits, right? What's the benefit? This is what everybody needs to be asking right now. What is the benefit for disclosure to be happening today? What do they gain from this? Is there a payoff about telling us the truth about UFOs or appearing to tell us the truth?
What is the payoff? Do you have a list?
I believe I got it. I mean, the real story here is this battle that is underway between an alliance that is actually very old, depending on which aspect of it you look at, and what we could call the deep state. And the bottom line is that this battle has been fought covertly, and probably as much as 90% of what's been going on is completely outside the scope of any access that anybody in the public has. And this battle is going into its final phases. Up until just in the last, well, pretty much for this whole year of 2018, so 6 months now, our briefings on this battle have dried up. And especially now, I would say, very recently, it's now like a moratorium. Like there's literally no intel coming in. And I've always, in the past, been able to get dribs and drabs of it. And I'll also do the research and I'll look at who's leaking things online and how can we correlate actual provable fact to what people are saying. For example, if somebody is claiming to be an insider and they talk about something and then that something comes true and there would have been no other way to anticipate such a twist in history, then you know that person is at least partially correct. I don't ever fall into the fallacy of expecting that one insider or one source is 100% true.
You can't.
I think that's a big mistake.
Right, you know? Right. Can't do it.
And so that's what's happened with the Tom DeLonge thing, is we don't know now if any of it is true, and we have to look at everything with a different way of looking. And so when I have been covering this battle of the alliance versus the deep state, and I've been out there talking about this thing literally for 10 years. I got briefings from Pete Peterson, who worked directly in the White House with Ronald Reagan, with Rumsfeld, with Cheney, with all these Sith Lords.
Right. That's good. That's good. That's
George
good.
Soros.
Right? Yeah, totally. That's good. That's funny.
Now he's wanted to get the mud off of his wheel of karma. So I'm literally not kidding when I say that Pete back in 2009 when I met him. He was working in the White House. They called him Dr. Dew because he'd been through this training program called White Star Ranch, where every year of his life, starting when he was still, most kids would be in high school, he's getting the equivalent education of a doctoral degree every year. And every year, it's a different PhD with a different guy who's the very, very best in his field. And a lot of this stuff is totally classified. So they wanted to create these super geniuses. And it's also interesting that Pete's grandfather was Tesla's main lab assistant. So Pete had also gotten all of the Tesla science that very, very few people have ever gotten their hands on. So he was an inventor, and you know, he's still here. Thank gosh, we almost lost him to a fall that broke his bone, and he had a stroke afterwards. His femur literally cracked in half, top to bottom. It was really horrible. But back in 2009, I went over with Kerry Cassidy and Bill Ryan. I paid for the trip and got us out there, got a hotel, and I started talking to Pete, and that was when he revealed stuff that had only been kind of on the periphery before. I'd been following Sherman Skolnick, who was a journalist who was in a wheelchair, and he would actually bust corrupt judges. Now, that's one of the most dangerous things to do, is take on a judge and get his ass thrown in prison. But that's what this dude was doing.
Right.
And Skolnick knew that there was an alliance. Now you got to go back and look at history, and you got to say, okay, wait a minute. What was really going on there with John F. Kennedy? Was it only him? No. There was obviously a team behind him that wanted to pass things like Executive Order 11-110 that would have taken the power to issue money and put it back in the hands of the Treasury, backed by silver. And then all of a sudden he gets shot. And, oh, yeah, it's this one dude, and there's this bullet that zinged around. Right. So then you got to look at things like Watergate, which is really only 10 years later, and that almost brought the whole thing down. And then, you know, even though a lot of people in the insider community kind of dislike Jimmy Carter was saying that he saw UFOs and that he wanted to bring out the truth. These guys get elected and they discover, oh my God, this is not safe. Reagan, this is one of the things that Pete told me, and this, remember, now he's hanging out with the Sith Lords, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Pete told me, you remember, you're old enough to remember this, Jimmy. Maybe a lot of people in the audience are. You remember when Reagan got shot at?
I do.
And then this dude, Brady, stumbled, and his head hit the bullet that was supposed to hit Reagan?
That's right.
And that's why we have the Brady Bill, which is the gun control bill?
That's right.
Why do you think somebody was shooting at Reagan? What's the deepest reason why that was happening?
Star Wars.
Because Reagan was going to tell us about UFOs.
That's right, Star Wars.
He'd been given some, he'd been given some briefings.
Yep.
And then they said, you know, and they really did want Reagan to be killed, incidentally. They did not like the fact that he survived, but what they told him was, if you ever open your effing mouth again, next time we won't effing miss. Okay, and he kept it quiet.
Well, let me jump in. I got to take a break right here, and we'll finish up that thought right after the break. And right before the break, David, we were talking about Reagan, and something popped into my head. It's really weird. If you think about it, you had Nixon, Ford, Carter, right? Reagan,
yep.
All in a row about the UFO subject. You know, Ford, when he was in Michigan, when he was governor there, had that big sighting, and he said, you know what, I'm going to Washington, we're going to have hearings, I'm going to get to the bottom of this.
I know.
Silence, I know. Right? Carter, of course. Reagan had his famous sighting in Malibu with Nancy tooling around the coast in their Mustang convertible and had their sighting. And they were very public about that. And so it was just all in a row, right? Of course, Barack talking about it, Bush, you know, on all the TV shows lately. But every single one of them, nothing. Nothing ever came of it.
Well, when Reagan tried, that's the threat that he got, you know. And it was divine intervention that Brady took a bullet for the president, because that president was working with what I'm calling the alliance, and he got a denouement of the Cold War nuclear threat with the USSR.
Right.
That whole thing with Glasnost and Perestroika with Gorbachev, you know, Reagan actually essentially defused the nuclear war threat with the USSR. And then it took a few more years before the USSR actually collapsed. But the other thing that I was going to point out before the break was 1987, right 1 year before Reagan's term ended, is when this whole Iran-Contra scandal started up. And this was another opportunity. Obviously, if you think about it, what did the Iran-Contra scandal really say? And I'm asking a rhetorical question. It's really saying, okay, you got these terrorists, right, in South America, but when they work for America, we call them freedom fighters. Or rebels, right?
Right.
These guys are freaking cutting people's tongues out and giving them the Colombian necktie. They're horrible people. And so one little scandal, of which there were so many, was just, okay, I got a great idea. I, meaning somebody in the government. Let's illegally sell weapons to Iran, and then let's take the money and let's arm the cocaine dealers so that we can have our cocaine business work as well as it can and not be interrupted. So they're doing two different illegal things, and they're using one to pay for the other, both of which are extraordinary treason. Now, if Iran-Contra had happened in the era of the internet, it would have been the complete downfall of the administration. And I personally believe, now, no insider has told me this. This is just my belief system only. I want to make that clear. But I believe that Reagan was behind it as revenge for them trying to kill him 6 years earlier. I think he was behind the Iran-Contra scandal. I think he knew what was going on, and I think he ordered it and wanted that whole corrupt bunch of Sith Lords around him to go down, because he knew they were the ones that tried to take him out. And he was already, you know, making them very angry with Gorbachev, and that was another step in that direction. And then he said, oh, I don't remember, you know. Well, of course, he knew what was going on, but he didn't want to commit perjury. So he didn't want to say anything. So Iran-Contra is another one of these examples, like Watergate, where we actually got really close, but there's this group in the background that wanted it to go much farther. And so when you really start to think about what we know now and the fact that there's at least 25,000 sealed indictments on the congressional record, and you can go on pacer.gov and look it up yourself, I haven't seen anybody credibly debunk that. It is definitely real. And we're seeing none of these indictments have been unsealed yet, except for maybe two. The two that we know of that were unsealed were Keith Raniere, who was the head of this cult called Nexium, mm-hmm. and Allison Mack, who, as I'm sure all your readers know and listeners know, was on this television show called Smallville about Superman. And she's supposed to be a good girl, you know, wouldn't get into trouble, just all around goody-two-shoes girl. And now you find out that she's recruiting underage women for a sex cult that's run out of Hollywood. And it's like, and those are only the first two unsealed indictments out of what's got to be now. I mean, I've heard different figures. The last one that I proved empirically 2 weeks ago was, I think, 24,500 roughly. So something big is going on. And I'm just saying, When we look at like 9/11, that's another great example. A lot of people were not ready for the truth back then. And the whole thing was so fishy. The internet was around, but it wasn't like it is now. You didn't have everybody able to do their own videos. back then, if you want to do streaming video, you had to pay like $50 a month, and then it was really low quality. And you had to host it yourself. And the only way you could do it was with something called RealPlayer.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking into it back then, but it was way too expensive for me at that time. So, you know, when 9/11 happened, we all go to TV. And the TV starts psychic driving. This is a mind control technique. And the president at the time is going, God bless America. Well, wait a minute. Yeah, it's great to have patriotism, but God bless America was kind of a way of saying, and F everybody else. And that's part of what the psychic driving was. It was intended to create this patriotic fervor. It is now a fact on the record that the senators who tried to vote against this 5-inch thick document called the USA Patriot Act, that was literally a rewrite of the Nazi Constitution that would have shredded our Constitution, shredded our freedom, shredded our liberty, taken away the right of habeas corpus, the right of due process. You can just be thrown into a jail somewhere. They can have military on the streets. They do whatever the heck they want, total martial law. And every senator that voted against it got a little envelope of anthrax mailed to him. And when they tested the anthrax, it came from Fort Detrick, Maryland. Right?
Right.
I mean, this kind of stuff. So I've been following this, man. I mean, when 9/11 happened, I knew this is not what it looks like. That you don't have a group of Arabs box cutters pull off something this perfect. I'm sorry. It's too synchronized. It was too good. It was too successful. You have three different buildings that just literally come down into their own footprint, one of which wasn't even hit by anything, Building 7. And then, of course, everybody's seen the video of the BBC lady who's talking in front of Building 7 saying that it had come down and it was still standing. So what I'm trying to tell you now is that try to remember, and this is one of the things Pete really got very clear with me about. If you are at all a religious person, when you sign up for the military, you have to do something called the Oath of Enlistment. And that means that you swear to God that you will defend the Constitution of the United States of America against all enemies, foreign and domestic. Everybody who signs up for the military is told how important this oath is. This is the most important part of your whole service, that you will defend the Constitution against domestic enemies. So don't think for a minute that the military didn't start to figure out what the heck was going on here and do something about it. And by the time 9/11 had happened, we already had the fallout from the Iran-Contra scandal and from other events. What we're calling the alliance, which is really in this case part of the U.S. military, they had already tricked out all of these different places, Bohemian Grove, the Oval Office, everywhere you can imagine, with hidden cameras and hidden microphones. And so they have damning video footage of these guys planning 9/11, neocons doing a self-inflicted wound, saying that, oh, yeah, yeah. Well, wait a minute. Why did we go into Iraq and Afghanistan? Did we ever even know that anybody from Iraq was responsible for 9/11? Not really. I don't even remember if they could pin one hijacker as being from Iraq or not. The problem is Iraq is the oil business and Afghanistan is the heroin business. And they wanted to control that money because they needed the money, because this alliance was working to try to make them broke. And so now that we can establish 9/11, it actually did not succeed. It was a huge, huge failure, because the plan, if it had been successful, was what Pete had been told. Pete was told 9/11 was coming. They didn't tell him the day. They told him the approximate window, and they expected some very, very bad things to happen. They expected mass riots, mass starvation, mass death. They expected that they were going to blow all these bridges on the interstates, which are all outfitted with explosives secretly. And then that's supposedly from a World War II era thing that if there's a land invasion, you want to blow the bridges so the tanks can't roll over the bridges. But what it also does is it isolates people and prevents them from getting food. And these people, the deep state, cabal, whatever, they really do have as one of their main goals, they want to try to get the numbers down. They want to try to get the population down because they think people are bad for the environment. So all of this work that's been done behind the scenes was presented to me in 2009 by Pete, where he's having briefings in what are called SCIF rooms. And SCIF is S-C-I-F, and it's an acronym for Sensitive Compartmented Information Facility. What that means is that when you go in there, nobody can hold you under surveillance. Anything that you talk about is actually confidential. No electromagnetic fields can get in there. It's got a Faraday cage. It's totally secure. And in these very, very secure rooms, he was telling me that there was this enormous effort from within the military to expose and defeat the deep state. And yeah, David, why are you talking politics? Well, it's not politics. Don't get stuck in the politics.
No, it's the conspiracy of politics. Big difference.
The politics are the stucco on the outside of the house. But you're not seeing the house. If you're looking at the stucco and you analyze the stucco in one little square of the stucco, it's right. Like the elephant paradox. You don't see that it's a house.
Right.
Right? So people get stuck in the politics and they think, oh, yeah, you know, well, we all know that it's about the oil companies and they're making money and it's the pharmaceutical companies and the media is corrupt and this is corrupt and that's corrupt. But it's just a bunch of jerks who are trying to, you know, make money. Not really, because the big insight that most of the people in this audience have already had is that the people that are controlling all of these aspects of our mainstream society are also holding on to the greatest treasure in the history of human civilization. They have been taking that money. They have been. That's why they needed to go into Iraq and Afghanistan after 9/11. Because they needed the oil money from Iraq, which didn't work, and they needed the heroin money from Afghanistan, which unfortunately did work, because they had had problems with the drug business. The cocaine business had kind of sputtered out in Central America, and they shifted their whole focus from cocaine to heroin. And you'll even see this in terms of what drugs do they promote with the music that they put out through the media. And that sounds like a wild conspiracy theory, but you hang out with the people I've hung out with, and these are the kind of things you start hearing.
Right.
So, I mean, look at, okay, Billy Idol, right? Great example. Billy Idol, some of his most famous songs, like White Wedding, right? Of course you remember that.
Of course.
The whole song is about doing heroin. And even in the video, they're banging nails into a coffin, which is intended to show the injection of the heroin. It's very obvious. When he says it's a nice day for a white wedding, he's talking about injecting yourself with this white substance. And it goes on and on and on. So they can promote drugs through the bands that they put in front of us. And this whole system has been very thoroughly jeopardized by this alliance, and they are winning. And we are now at a critical juncture. And so the alliance's effort will include telling us the truth about all of the stuff that went deep black after Roswell, 1947. We got 71 years of being lied to, where just like you said, every president who's supposed to be, the buck stops here, right? Mm-hmm. Not so. They're not on a need to know. Most of the insiders I have at least have cosmic clearance. Cosmic top secret is 35 levels of need to know above the President of the United States. Now, just think about that. It's a whole little insider world, and they don't give a flying F about anybody else but their little world. And now, at last, we have this international effort that is bringing these guys down, that's exposing them week after week. You're hearing more and more stuff. The Snowden stuff with the NSA and all those papers was totally part of the alliance's effort. WikiLeaks, same thing. It goes on and on and on. We've had a lot of disclosure. We've learned a lot of things that these people didn't want us to know. And it does look to me as if we are seeing a battle now in terms of who and which side gets to control the release of information in disclosure.
Well, let me jump in, because now with QAnon, with I believe Alex Jones, I didn't hear Alex say this directly, but I got a ton of email today that Alex is now saying that QAnon has been compromised and has been compromised, right? And
the Bilderberg elite,
right?
Compromised Q.
Yes, yes.
Don't trust anything he says.
But I could actually believe that. It would make a lot of sense, because you don't actually know. You have the veil. Until you see somebody from QAnon or QAnon, if it's singular or if it's multiple people, it doesn't matter. Unless you're standing over the shoulder watching the post go down, you don't know who QAnon is, right? So if it could be...
Most people don't.
Right?
Few of us do.
Right? I get that, right? I get that, but... It's again a part of the misdirection of through multimedia and social media, the news feed, right? And I was blown away by that today, and then I had to step back and go, well, okay, it's Alex, so where do we go with this? But it is still Alex, and he could be correct.
Well, okay, now I as a general rule, I have a very strict policy. We do not eat our own. We do not hang our own. We either hang together or we hang separately.
That's right. That's right.
So with that being said, I try to never criticize any other public figures in my field. But I also, thanks to access points like what I've had with Corey Good, like what I've had with Pete Peterson, I haven't actually been able to speak to Alliance people directly, unless you would say that since they're working for the Alliance, they're technically part of it. But I get feedback, and I get sometimes very pointed criticisms. But believe me, nobody is going around doing a bunch of high fives and telling everybody they're doing a good job. It's a very rough war. There's a lot of problems with morale. There's a lot of problems with... wondering whether this is going to work. Even though they're doing what I think is a great job and it's very comprehensive, and they really want to try to purge as many people one by one who could really throw this off first before they do the big stuff, and I think they're getting pretty darn close now. The Alliance people, they're military. Okay, now my father was in the military. My father honorably served in Vietnam as a journalist. He wrote the Army paper at Long Binh, which was the biggest base everybody was at. And he covered Woodstock during Woodstock. While he was at that base, he was the only person at the largest Army base in Vietnam actually telling the soldiers about this revolution that was happening in America, which I think that's pretty cool. So I grew up with that. But I did not enlist in the military. My father had a very negative view of it. He would say, once you sign on the line, your ass is mine. He felt that you would give up your whole life and give up your freedom, and they basically treat you as a piece of property that they can kill whenever they want. He had a very negative opinion of it. So, but you have to understand, the people in the Alliance now, they are military 100%, at least a good number of them. And so it's all about do your job, and don't complain, and there's no excuse to slow down. There's no excuse to relax. This is a war. We're fighting for our lives. We're fighting for whether the planet will exist and whether people will be able to even have a life on this planet. They do feel that they are fighting the great biblical evil that was talked about. Satan would rule the earth. They do believe that's what this is, and in many ways, I agree. And so it's very important to keep in mind that if you start to deviate from what they think is something that's beneficial or positive, they're going to get really upset. Now, one of the things that I think they got really upset about is that Alex Jones has now been interviewing an alleged Illuminati insider named Leo Zagami.
Leo's been on this show many times.
Yeah. Now, I spoke to Leo myself, okay? I had conversations with him way the heck back in like 2001 when he was first coming out. There were some things that he said to me in our conversation that put me on edge because he was talking about the magical power of the bloodlines and that they were naturally more evolved and that they had the right to rule. And he was talking about this with me as if it was a mutual understanding that we both had, that I also acknowledged that, oh, yeah, there's these Illuminati bloodlines, and those people are more evolved than the rest of us, and they should rule the planet. Well, that made me feel pretty uncomfortable. And it's okay if you believe that. You know, it's okay philosophically. We could have an argument about whether that's true. Are they the descendants of extraterrestrials? Do they have more alien DNA than the rest of us? Is that why they kept royal bloodlines, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? But if you're not interested in keeping people alive, if you're trying to kill people off, then even if you did get a little DNA head start, that doesn't make it right for you to want to kill off everybody on Earth. Even if you guys were smarter, even if you guys industrialized ahead of everybody else and, you know, brought us a lot of things that we didn't have before in terms of civilization, doesn't give you the right to be a jerk. So I think part of what's happened with this Alex Jones versus Alliance thing is QAnon came out and said that Alex Jones is talking to people who are purporting to be insiders, but that they're really not. And so they attacked him very frontally. They named him. So, of course, he's going to protect and defend his own interests. And I think that they, if you read the Q stuff, what I get from it is that Alex is trying, they feel that Alex is trying to control the narrative. He's trying to make himself the center of the whole process. It's a very closed system. I've been out there ever since, almost as long as he was. I remember hearing his show in 1995. Okay, that's when I remember first listening to Alex Jones. I've tried, for however long that is, 22, 23 years, to get on his show. He has never given me the time of day. Not once. Not ever. And so it's tough because I've seen his team pick up stories that I broke and not say where he got it from. And I think the Alliance got really rubbed the wrong way. And I think Alex could probably get back on their good side by being a little more flexible and not trying to act as if he's got to be the portal through which disclosure and the defeat of the deep state happens. Well, but to understand it's a multifaceted effort. It's not about one person.
Right. And I think that, and I think most would agree, that a small percentile of what he reports is true. A large percentile of what he does is shticked and is entertainment.
Listen, everybody, listen to how I put Jimmy in this field of landmines. Don't you love this? Yeah, he's tiptoeing very carefully.
Well, because it's true, though. but it's true. And
no,
Alex, yeah, and Alex is cool with that. He's built his little empire, and he's able to do. I listen to Alex Jones. I do. It drives Rita crazy. But
oh yeah,
I laugh. I there's some of it where I go, okay, whoa, where I know that there is a kernel of truth here. But he is able to do this entertainment thing and pull people in. So what do we do with that? I'm not so sure if I have those answers. Let's take a break right here, though, David. I want to continue. I want to continue to discuss QAnon. We'll do this right after the break. Our guest tonight, the one and only David Wilcock. This is Fade to Black and the Game Changer Network at KGRA, The Planet. Stay with us. David, I want to stay on QAnon for a second because the post and the information, you know, let's go back to the beginning. was visible to and focused on the conspiracy community. Very small, you know, section of the world. And the rest of the world or the United States or whatever, they know nothing about QAnon. And then you bring in Alex, and I mean nobody. You can go, you could literally go up to 100 people in the street, and 100 have never heard of QAnon. And that's the bottom line here. You bring in Alex Jones, and it widens into the conspiracy community, but still, really, nobody knows anything about it. But if you want to change the narrative inside of our community, you use something like QAnon to, you know, put out some information, maybe accurate, maybe not. That doesn't matter. The point is, it gets people talking about it, and then change it, and then ruin it, and say, hey, it's been infiltrated. Now nobody knows what to believe from some pretty fantastical post and forum stuff that was going on for a while. It's pretty ingenious if you think about it, and now QAnon could very quickly, inside of the conspiracy community, because of Alex Jones, just get discredited and go away.
I don't know if I agree with that. I think that there is a very fiercely loyal QAnon community that is unaffected by Alex's opinion. I think that community may have been surprised when QAnon started to link to things that were critical of Alex Jones, because that did just happen over the last week. I've been following this almost hour by hour. There's more QAnon stuff.
It's pretty interesting.
And based on the briefings that I've had, I was told, for what it's worth, and these sources have been correct on many, many other things, that QAnon is authentic and it is the only sanctioned voice of the Alliance at this time. Now, the Alliance is a confederacy, meaning that it's a group of different factions that are working together to some degree but don't agree on everything. And so one of the things I heard was, you're never really going to get a formal official Alliance briefing, because that would require everybody to agree on something. But there have been some very interesting smoke signals that I want to point out here. First of all, the president, on May 2nd, as I'm sure you know, and I'm sure you talked about, said maybe we need a sixth branch of the military because we're doing so much stuff in space, we'll call it the Space Force. But wait a minute, what are we doing in space? And why did he then say we're very close to being able to go to Mars? No, we're not. You know, that should be many years away. So this idea that he put out there of a Space Force, and you even have the video of these cadets behind him, and they're kind of smirking because they don't know what he's talking about. They think it's ridiculous.
Right, right.
But it totally fits with what we've been talking about. Alex Jones went from being a total skeptic, and now he talks about the secret space program, and he's got secret space program insiders on there, like this guy Zach, who worked for Lockheed Martin. And then the thing that really was provocative for me, and this was all in the last week, and I haven't even had a chance to write an article about this, so maybe I'll write something up and we'll link to this show. Once you get the video up and everything, we'll link to this show, and that'll be part of the article.
Okay.
But there was a very curious two words, and those two words jumped out at me as if they were shining with light, and it said sky event. And then, very shortly after that, a picture of a hotel was uploaded by Q, where there's three hotel buildings, or whatever they are. They are skyscrapers of some kind. They're black. They're all the same height. And then there's this, what looks like a tube on top of all three of them. Now, I don't even know what that is. It might be something in China where it's like a walkway that goes between the buildings that has trees on it. I don't know. But what it looks like is a cigar-shaped UFO type of craft. And they post this picture and they just leave it hanging there with no explanation. And another thing that's very interesting is that in the same initial article, that attacked Alex Jones that has gotten the whole internet so lit up, the people that are following QAnon, which are in the millions. So I don't know if I'd agree with you, Jimmy, about 100 out of 100 wouldn't know about it. It's surprising how many people I've found who do know something about it. So if Q goes and lights up Alex Jones and you know, gives him some trouble by linking to this article, okay, you read the article and there's multiple references to Jordan Sather, who has been following up on all of the work that I've been doing for 25 years, doing a great job interviewing the same people I've interviewed. He's interviewed Corey, he's interviewed Emery, he's interviewed William Tompkins, and he's a fearless guy, and he's a patriot, and I think he's amazing. So Jordan Sather is the secret, he's the other secret space program guy. There's not very many of us. And they linked to that article. So it's Sky Event, you know, linking to Jordan Sather, showing us this picture of this cigar-shaped, what looks like a cigar-shaped craft, and then we have Trump saying Space Force, sixth branch of the military, and we're going to go to Mars really soon. All of this, to me, is indicative that they are getting ready to follow up on a briefing that we got months and months ago, which was that when the theater of war around North Korea was still looking like they were going to get hit with a really big strike to try to stop them from developing nukes, which is now, of course, not an issue. They're totally throwing up their hands in surrender and saying, we're out. We're out of the game. We want peace with South Korea. But back when it looked like there was going to need to be some sort of precision military strikes against their missile silos, the briefing we were getting, and it came in, I don't know, five or six times, was that these people in the alliance, which is, again, the U.S. military, the majority of the U.S. military has turned on the deep state. This is the core of the war that we're seeing. It's a battle between the military and the people who control the financial system and the media. So what's happening is we were told that they were going to have these triangular-shaped craft similar to the classic TR-3B, and they were going to decloak them for this strike on North Korea, and that was going to be the disclosure, that was going to be how it would start. So when I see Sky Event and then that weird, weird picture, and Jimmy, you can probably go pull it and put it up on your site.
I'm looking at it right now.
It's so weird, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty trippy. It's pretty trippy. Like,
I mean, it's not. I don't think it's photoshopped. And then they always talk about, oh yeah, we're posting original photos. These have never been online before. So I don't think it's literally a decloaked craft. My skeptic side says it's probably some kind of walkway that crosses over these three buildings so that people can go from one to the other without going through traffic.
It kind of looks like that, but the right hand side of it continues, extends out.
That's true. That is weird.
Yeah.
I really don't know what the heck it is, and that's it. The Q thing does frustrate me a little bit, and I'm being probably too honest here, but, you know, in the good old days, meaning like 6 months ago, we'd get briefings in plain speaking English. We would be told, okay, this is what's going on, this is what's happening, and it was very specific. Q is like a puzzle. It's encrypted. You have to decipher what they're saying, and so, you know, it's not as easy as it used to be. It used to be just really a question of, do I promote what we're hearing? Do I write it up and put it out on the internet? Now it's like, well, it's a puzzle, and you got to crack the code. You got to solve the puzzle. So I really do think that they are now looking at some kind of decloaking that they're going to do in a big, dramatic way. And you and me and everybody in this community, we are going to be all over that stuff like white on rice as soon as it happens.
Okay, just to let you know, it is the Marina Hotel in Singapore. I'm looking at a real picture. I'm looking at 100 pictures of it. And that is indeed what it is. So it is a real hotel. That is a. It's almost, when you look at it, it looks like they built a cruise ship. In fact, that's what it is. It's a cruise ship. It's going across the top of the three hotels.
So it is like a walkway.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. It's beautiful, actually. That's pretty badass. I would definitely stay at that hotel. So that that is that answer there. But let me go back to one point I want to get your opinion on, because Alex did say that QAnon started out as one person inside of the Trump organization, I'm paraphrasing here, turned into a collective inside of the Trump administration.
That's probably true.
Yeah, leaking this information. So are those members of Trump's staff alliance?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is something that it incites a great deal of controversy, but you know what, Jimmy? That also means a lot of people are going to listen to this because we're going to get them all fired up. So let's go for it, because it's good to get the word out. Okay, this might not be the alliance you want, but it's the alliance you have. And I want to make that clear.
Okay, fair enough.
Right?
Fair enough.
It's a lot of people, and I've seen this all along, right? The core, we were talking earlier about the hate we get online. The core of the hate that comes towards me, right? And I told you it was two things, ego and money. And it's for everybody. It's not just me. This is ubiquitous. What does that really mean? What that means is the person who is committing that hate to writing, and in so doing, attracting negative karma, which is, you know, I don't try to hate on anybody if I can possibly avoid it. It's a very, very bad idea to create negativity, especially publishing it in a public forum, right? You will get karmic backlash for that. Whether you believe it or not, I do believe it, and I've seen plenty of evidence. So when somebody accuses you of these things, ego and money, what they're saying is, I want to like you, but there's pieces that don't fit for me, and it upsets me. It upsets me that you're making money. It upsets me that you seem to have an overinflated sense of yourself. That seems to be the core of the argument. And I really see that same exact projection going against this version of the alliance that we're actually getting. Oh, Trump has a huge ego and Trump's a billionaire.
Right.
Ego and money. Same thing, right? Same thing.
Right.
So here's what I'm trying to look at, everybody, okay? Please understand, as you listen to these words, and I'm speaking to you, the listener, directly, person to person now, man to man or man to woman, we are in a war. And we would love it if this was like a Hollywood movie, and just like what Stan Lee used to say about his comic book films, because I was working with Jim Hart, who was developing a comic book movie for Stan Lee, you know, back before the Iron Man and the whole Avengers thing really took off. Jim was working on another character, and Jim wrote a script in which the villain was kind of, you could kind of understand why he was doing what he was doing. He was kind of a sympathetic character. And maybe this is classified, maybe I'm saying things I shouldn't say, but Stan Lee sat him down and said, the good guys need to be good, the bad guys need to be bad. You know, and it goes back to the Lone Ranger, right? Where, like, in the Lone Ranger television show, the Lone Ranger wears white, and the guy that he's going to shoot, who's the bad guy, wears black. Same basic concept. That's not what we have here. The alliance has been compromised to varying degrees. They are coming out of the deep state. What we're really seeing is the deep state gradually arresting itself. Now, one of the things that's gotten really controversial that they're not going to be able to put a lid on this very long is all of these accusations of Trump taking money from the Rothschilds. There's some videos that have been linked to by G. Edward Griffin, who's the guy that wrote about the Federal Reserve, the creature of Jekyll Island. Those videos are starting to get traction. They're not going to go away. I'm not going to ignore that, okay? So, but I want to say this. People are looking up, and they're looking up Trump, and they're saying, oh my God, he accepted money from the Rothschilds back in the 1980s. Everybody in that circle who makes that much money deals with the Rothschilds. Everybody.
Has to.
And you can't avoid it because they deliberately invest in everything. They've got their fingers in everything that makes money. Telecommunications, oil, pharmaceuticals, banking, military, media, you name it, they're in it. Casinos, the whole thing, they've got it all. That doesn't mean that if you were married to someone in the past, and this is not even a marriage, okay, but I'm just making an analogy. If you were married to somebody in the past, and then you divorce them, that doesn't mean that you continue to agree with everything that they did or said or are doing and saying. And so it's funny that I've seen this thing that's just started to pop up of people saying, look at what happened here, as if, oh my God, this whole alliance thing is fake and Trump's a fake and he's just a Rothschild puppet. There's way too much evidence against that, and I want to speak to this directly, okay? And I might be the only person with the steel cojones to say this on the radio, but I'm going to say it. You can't just take that one piece of data out of context. You have to look at the bigger picture and see the possibility that he could have taken money from them and he could have screwed them. He could have betrayed them. And maybe they're still trying to call in favors, and maybe he's caught in the middle between two factions. But there's way too much stuff that he has done that would mortally wound them. And it's just a fact that these big interests are threatened. And that is why we're seeing literally 90% negative coverage in the media. So I get it. It's not the alliance you want. This is not the guy you want. A lot of people are feeling this way, right? And we can still have an intelligent, respectful discussion about this without either being 100% pro or 100% against. There is a middle path, like in Buddhism, right? Buddha said, I don't want to be out there on the street in a robe with a begging bowl, but I also don't want to live in my family's palace. I want to find the middle path. The middle path with the alliance, to my reckoning, is that these people in the alliance approached him because he might have gotten money from these people like anybody would, because it's all, there's only a few people doing all this business. But he wasn't doing the really crazy stuff. He wasn't doing the stuff that we don't even want to talk about on the radio because it's so gross. The stuff that is just unimaginable crimes. Okay? So what we're dealing with is two different sides of a war that are, to varying degrees, unpalatable and disappointing. But what I feel is going on is that the group that is a far greater threat to us and far more insidious and far more evil is the group that's losing. And as they lose control of the reins, we are going to see an exposure of truth. We're going to see an exposure of knowledge that is so epic, so dramatic, that anybody like deep state-oriented Rothschilds, you name it, they will be mortally wounded, irreversibly affected by this, and there's no turning back.
When was that picture of Singapore released by QAnon?
Well, I'm not in front of the computer, but it was about a week ago.
Was it before they announced the North Korea meeting in Singapore?
That's a good question.
Yeah,
that's a good question. It might have been.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. If I need to go, you know what? We have the audience is listening now, so they'll give it to me in Twitter right now. I think it was over the weekend, the announcement about Singapore directly from the White House. So if QAnon leaked that photo, or posted that photo of the hotel in Singapore before the announcement from the White House, that's pretty interesting. I know that Singapore was already on the list, but it wasn't officially announced.
That's a great point. I just don't want to lose sight, though, of the fact that this was the very next thing they posted after they said sky event, a very enigmatic phrase suggesting that the event will take place in the sky.
That's right. So the meeting between Trump and Kim Fatty Fat would occur in the sky at this hotel, right? That's an event in the sky, but it's interesting that
then why are they linking to Jordan Sather, who's the secret space program guy? Why are they getting all their readers to look into the secret space program by posting that link?
I don't know, because Jordan looks good without his t-shirt on. I don't know.
I've never seen it, and I wouldn't want to.
Yeah, I'm just kidding. I don't know. I don't know what that connection is, but they're saying here it was posted on May 10th. And okay. Today is the 14th. Okay. When was the announcement? Okay. The date was announced May 10th. Okay. So that's flooding in here. So it happened on the same day. Okay. Yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah. Very interesting. Very interesting. It's the reason why I find it interesting is it sounds more and more like this is an official source from inside of the White House.
Oh yeah, no. There's been plenty of examples of undeniable advanced knowledge. And remember, Q goes all the way back to approximately October 27th, 2017. And they 100% telegraphed that something very big and very amazing was going to happen in Saudi Arabia before they arrested hundreds of corrupt princes and officials. And that, to me, had me sold right at the beginning. I'm like, how in the world could they have seen the Saudi Arabia coup coming before it happened? Nobody knew that was going to happen. And yet it was right there in black and white. And that operation was way too coordinated for them to have just gotten the idea from reading Q. I mean, give me a break.
Right.
It was planned for months and months and months.
So this is... Oh, yeah.
This is very interesting stuff. It's what everybody's talking about in our community right now. And the fact that nobody's getting briefings anymore has really leveled the playing field. It really now comes down to your powers of observation. And I wanted to toss one thing in real quick because I know we're probably going to hit a break here.
Yes.
And that is the last article I wrote 2 weeks ago, Q was saying we're going to get the mother of all bombs next week. Okay, it obviously didn't happen. But I think what they did was they threw that out there to see what the deep state would try out when they said that they were all of a sudden going to do something really big.
Right.
And so what we're seeing is I think two things that could have been done by the deep state. Number one is they set off Kilauea in Hawaii. Now, they probably hoped that was going to be a lot worse than it was. They probably hoped that was going to be this big mass catastrophe that would be another 9/11 and would distract everybody. I mean, it's bad, but very few people have been affected by it. I mean, people have lost their homes, but it hasn't led to a mass loss of life. They probably thought that it would. They probably tried to make it that way, and were very lucky that it fractured out into a bunch of different fissures instead of one big catastrophic boom. And the other thing that I think is going on right now that's really big is all of this saber rattling in the Middle East, which, again, it's like as soon as the proxy fake straw man proxy army for the deep state, North Korea, they didn't want to be doing this. They knew they were a sacrificial lamb. Now they're not being blackmailed. Now they get to actually be nice because they're not having to boot at their throat. So now all of a sudden they want peace. All of a sudden the Middle East just goes crazy and missiles are shooting off and it's all this crazy stuff trying to get World War III started, which isn't working. So again, I think the reason why they teased the mother of all bombs was let's just drop that out there and see what the deep state does and test them. And I think those were the two big things they tried to do as weapons of mass distraction to try to throw this thing off. So they're gathering information as they do this. Some of what they're saying is not true on purpose to see what the deep state is going to do as each new move in this chess game is played.
Let's take a break right here, David, and we're going to let's continue this the Middle East, every QAnon, all of that is huge news. But we're going to move on because when we come back, I want to talk solar flares. Are you down?
Okay, great.
Let's do that when we come back. Our guest tonight, David Wilcock. Stay with us. Now, David, I want to, You have talked about solar flares and mass events for quite a while, but that's not where I was going before the break. I want the audience to know. I did want to discuss Alpha Centauri, and you have a very interesting take on it, and let's kind of go here right now. Let's discuss Alpha Centauri and, of course, Proxima B. And this intense, for the audience, we had a few different things that happened over the last couple of years. One, we had Stephen Hawking and Yuri Milner, the Russian oligarch, that we're going to fund little micro satellites, probes, at the speed of light, heading out towards Alpha Centauri, because they felt that that, well, it was the closest star to us, number one. Number two, that there was a high probability of alien life being there, and they wanted to find out. So that was announced a couple of years ago. And then last year, they announced Proxima B, in the Goldilocks zone, a planet that was in the perfect spot for alien life. That combined with Stephen Hawking was very interesting. And then last month it was announced that they had a massive solar flare and Proxima B was incinerated. Now, three pretty big news events right in a row, all about Alpha Centauri and Proxima B.
It's very, very interesting stuff. When I saw this story, it first came out when I was in the middle of moving from California to Colorado, where I am now. And I've moved to a nice remote area of Boulder, very private and secluded. And I'm really enjoying it. I'm not missing being in Los Angeles.
I'm picturing Jack Nicholson. picturing Jack Nicholson in the middle of winter. Just be careful what you wish for, David.
Well, I'm not here alone, you know.
Neither
I'm a married man now. I'm very happily married, and we're having a great time. You know, we got plenty of trees and moose and all kinds of elk and everything to keep us company out here.
Right.
And, So this subject, I think, has a much deeper context to it than some people may realize. And so I'm going to come back to Proxima Centauri in a minute, but I want to give you the reason why this got me so excited. This came through in February, and if I wasn't in the middle of moving, I would have jumped on it immediately. I'm only just now starting to settle into the house. We're in a weird remote area where there's bad internet, and so we're just now working out an internet solution where we're going to have a connection that's good enough that I could actually do a live video, because right now I could not. It's terrible.
Let me jump in. Mark Toronto from Toronto out in Australia wanted me to ask you this. Did you call Art Bell in the 1990s saying that you were trying a time traveler?
Oh, Jesus. This keeps coming up. No, that's not me.
Oh, man. It'd be cool if it was. I mean, it's a great story.
No, the first time I was on with Art Bell, I was actually talking about this exact subject. I was talking about the sun and the changes in the sun. And it was in, I believe, April of 2001. And then it was 2 weeks later that I did a full show with Dr. Scott Manilker, where we talked about the spiritual implications of these changes. And that was a great show. It's a classic. And then very soon after that is when I went to the Disclosure Project.
So I'm tweeting out.
No, it was not me.
Yeah, I'm tweeting out now. That is that. We can move on. Okay. Back to the solar flare.
Our audience is all conspiracy theorists, right? And so you have lots of people with lots of time to come up with these outrageous theories, and that one is not true. Maybe others are, but that one is not true.
Okay. Oh, man. Okay, back to solar flares, Alpha Centauri.
Okay. So I want people to keep in context here that my career started in a very strange way where I really was more focused on spirituality and not politics. And the early experiences that I had convinced me on a spiritual level, and this is including many, many very, very profound dreams that have been happening to me ever since, practically since I was born. I had beings in weird craft, some of which were cigar-shaped, that were wearing robes, and some of them had beards, you know, like a gray-haired beard. And these beings would talk to me about that there was going to be this magnificent change in what it means to be human within my lifetime, that we were going to see this magnificent spiritual transformation. And so I was getting those messages ever since I was a kid. And as I got older, they just got more and more specific. And for me, the big catalyst that knocked it all out of the park was getting a disclosure in 1993 from a friend of mine whose physics professor was the head of the department and said that it was common knowledge for everybody in NASA where he worked in the 70s that Roswell was real, that we had UFOs, and that we had gotten all this back-engineered technology from them, including the whole computer age. If these ships hadn't crashed, we would still probably be using vacuum tubes, and we wouldn't have iPhones. So that was a very interesting thing that led to me reading books, basically kind of blowing my college education. I mean, I did enough to get a decent B+, A- type of average, but I really didn't put a lot of time into my classes. I spent all my time researching UFOs, and I literally emptied out the 000 section of the library. I became aware, the more that I read, that there was this consistent grain of prophecy underlying the UFO phenomenon. And the prophecy seemed to be religious in nature, and it dealt with the idea that the reason why these beings were here, the reason why they were giving us this technology endowment in Roswell, is they were trying to get us ready for this magnificent change in what it means to be human. And this change was seeded into all of the major spiritual traditions and religions. So a lot of times, if people are not really familiar with what I'm talking about, they'll say, oh, David sounds like a fundamentalist Christian. He's talking about the rapture. Well, that's sort of, it's a very limited perspective when seen in context of all the other ancient prophecies that also talk about this. It's not just Christianity. It's in Buddhism. It's in Hinduism. It's in Zoroastrianism. It's in Greek philosophy. It's in Roman philosophy. It shows up in Egyptian prophecy. It shows up all throughout the Native American tribes. It's literally everywhere you go. Everybody's got some kind of seed of knowledge. And in my view, as is the case with some scholars from Cambridge University that I've discussed, and others, that there has to be a common source of origin for why all of these prophecies line up so well. Why is everybody predicting that we're going to have a golden age? What does that mean? What happens to the human body, the human being, as we go through this change? Now, this is where it gets interesting, because as you dig deeper into these prophecies, they clearly delineate that there is going to be a massive release of energy and light from the sun. And this is what we just saw at Proxima Centauri, which is one of the stars in the Alpha Centauri system. Proxima B is one of the planets orbiting Proxima Centauri, right? So I've been looking at these solar flash prophecies ever since I started to read books when I found out that NASA was lying. And it took several years for me to really understand, okay, the sun is probably going to do some physical thing, some big flash. But what has happened is another huge transformative event for me was in 2000 when I found a paper from a Russian scientist named Dr. Oleksiy Dmitriev called Planet the Physical State of the Earth and Life. And this paper was arguing that the entire solar system was going through a massive energetic charge up. And he gave very specific examples. The sun is getting brighter, hotter, more magnetic, and he had almost all the planets in the solar system. And then by the year 2004, Richard C. Hoagland, who at the time was one of the biggest names in the whole field, if not the biggest name, commissioned me to do the research and see if the Russian science would actually hold up with NASA specifics. And so we published that paper in 2005. And it was called Interplanetary Day After Tomorrow. And it was more than enough references for a PhD dissertation, because you only need about 120, 130 for a PhD, depending on the subject. This had about 160 in it. So it was incredibly, incredibly detailed research that I did all on my own, digging up NASA, showing you each planet in the solar system, its magnetic field is growing much larger. Its surface visible brightness is getting much brighter. It's having global warming. The planets are actually melting. They're getting hotter. The ice is melting. And now, as we've taken it through the present, you know, and I'm getting ready to put out a video about this, another YouTube video that really goes into these prophecies and shows you what's going on, because it's so stunning what's happening. All the gas giant planets in the last few years have had magnificently huge clouds that totally alter the way they look much more dramatically than anything we've seen all throughout the time that we've had any ability to look at these planets with any depth of scale. And so something very, very strange is happening where the whole solar system is charging up. And so my argument is, if you look at the way that physics works, you can look at even simple stuff like the physics of the steam engine, right? What would you have for a steam engine to explode? What would have to be the precursor for that explosion?
I don't know.
It would have to be a consistent buildup of pressure on the inside of whatever explodes.
Well, yeah, true. Right.
So the pressure's going to build up. Isn't that what's happening in the solar system? If the sun is going to give off a flash, right, that's a whole lot of excess energy, the equivalent of your steam blowing off, right? So you got to have pressure. You got to have an energetic charge up. There has to be what physicists would call potential energy before it gets released as kinetic energy. And so the fact that the Hindus anticipated that the sun was going to give off a huge flash, they called it the Samvartika fire at the end of the age. The Zoroastrians anticipated a solar flash. They called it Frashokoreti. And they said that it would be like a river of molten metal, but that the righteous would not be affected by it. That you would just get transformed and it would be as comfortable as taking a bath in warm milk. I don't think I'd be comfortable in a milk bath, but apparently this was something they used to do back then. So anyway, the Egyptians have it. It's in Christianity, where Jesus says, as the light shineth from the east unto the west, so too shall the coming of the Son of Man be. That's one of several references to it. There's a lot of stuff like in the book of John and in the book of Mark and Matthew, where Jesus says, if you're on the top of your house, don't even bother to go down inside. Just stay on the roof. If you're out in the field, don't turn around. Just stay where you are. And then there's all this very enigmatic stuff that's in Mark, I believe, where he says, two are in the field, and then there will be one. Two will be walking, and then there will be one. And when you really dig into this, here's what I think is going on. I think that the main reason why we're having so many UFO sightings and why there's all this intrigue around UFOs right now is because there's a lot of people here, and I'm not going to use that term instead of aliens because I think that's racist, basically. Most of these extraterrestrials are human. I think they're here now so that they will be able to make sure that we get through this transformation the way that we're supposed to, which is not being harmed by it, unless you're one of these Sith Lord type people who've attracted enough karma that you would need on a spiritual level to go through something like this. And there will be people that go through this physically, I believe. So we're looking at the whole solar system charging up, which seems to be in advance of the sun blowing off some steam, just like a steam engine blowing up. And the purported cause of this solar system charging up is not Planet X. Those people stole all my data all the way back in 2001, and they all started writing books and making money on it. I was giving the information away on the internet. You can't make the sun do all this with a planet, because the sun is 99.86% of all the mass in the solar system, meaning all the planets and asteroids and comets combined is only 0.14%. of the mass. So to try to say that a planet could be doing this is like saying that you could put a car in neutral and get it to move with a refrigerator magnet from the strength of the attractiveness of the magnet. It's not going to happen. What is apparently going on is that our solar system is drifting into a cloud of highly magnetic and very, very much hotter plasma energy. And the Russians were seeing this all the way back in 1997 with the paper that I read in 2000. NASA did not actually acknowledge it until 2009 with a woman named Dr. Merov Ofer. and they were looking at Pioneer and Voyager, these space probes out at the edge of our solar system, and they're saying, wait a minute, we were measuring this stuff before, and now everything's gone haywire. Now it's way too hot out here, and it's way too magnetic out here. What the heck is going on? And she formally concluded that we are going into some kind of galactic cloud. Well, if the prophecies are telling us that the sun's going to do a flash, and the cause of all the solar system charge up, all the planets getting more magnetic, hotter, brighter, if that's caused by this very hot, very magnetized cloud, which it seems to me very obvious that it would be, and then our immediate next door neighbor is going through the same cloud, and it's only 4.3 light years away, which in galactic terms is just nothing.
Right.
So if this is a big cloud that's hanging out there in the galaxy, and then our closest neighbor in I think it was May 2017, I'm doing this off the top of my head right now.
That's right. It was.
Okay, May 2017. Now, I saw two different reports. One said it was 1 minute. Another one said 10 seconds. And so I'll go with the 10 seconds.
Well, we can split it. You and I were talking about that. Let's go with 30 seconds.
Okay. 30 whatever seconds. It was, it's more than 10 seconds, less than a minute, whatever. But the point was, we now have scientists using telescope data, very advanced optics, to conclude that the nearest star to us had exactly the same event that all of these religious prophecies said was going to happen to us. And so if the beings that gave us those prophecies, that gave us those religions, they look human, but they're really human extraterrestrials. And I think the term human extraterrestrial and angel are interchangeable, by the way. If that's the case, they knew they could time out when we were going to hit this cloud, when we were going to hit it hard enough that the sun would do its thing. I think Alpha Centauri is farther into the cloud than we are by just enough that they got their solar flash before we got ours. And what you're looking at, NASA is formally stating, 1,000 times brighter than normal. This is a full halo coronal mass ejection. And they said that if this were to happen in our solar system, it would be 4,000 times more radiation than we normally get. So that's where you got to have a Noah's Ark. That's where you got to have an interstellar rescue plan, because at least in the physical sense, nobody's getting through this thing. And that's what these prophecies talk about. They talk about the idea that if you only stay in the physical form, it's curtains. What you have to do is you have to ascend. You have to go into a higher level of what it means to be human, a spiritual sudden evolution that is triggered by these changes, if you are ready. And this is where, to me, it gets really interesting, is that readiness is determined ultimately by how much you have adhered to the great spiritual guidelines that have been given to us, which actually do line up very nicely with what we think of as the message of Christ, the message of the Buddhists, the message of the Hindus. They're all saying, be nice. You know, be meditative, be peaceful, exercise compassion, exercise forgiveness, see that we are all one, see that we are unified with each other, see that there's no need for us to fight over my God is better than your God, my country is better than your country, my race, my gender, my age, you know, just get rid of all that. Find a way to be loving with each other, because it's not just about, I don't want to have bad karma, I want to, you know, not get in trouble with the universe. No, it literally appears that we are in this pivotal moment in the history of our planet where everybody is personally choosing whether they're going to graduate when this happens or not. And if you don't graduate, based on all the esoteric material that I've seen, you get 25,000 more years to think about it on another planet. And I don't know about you, Jimmy, but I'm done with the third dimension.
Yeah, it's a fun place to hang out because we have Van Halen. but this is, you know, when we think about Proxima B, whatever life was there, let's hope that they did achieve that enlightenment, because in less than 60 seconds, the planet not only lost its atmosphere, but was reduced to a lump of coal and will be that way probably forever.
Well, the first secret space program insider who really gave me detailed information I got through Project Camelot, his pseudonym was Henry Deacon. He didn't want me to use his real name. So he was the first person, and I was talking to him all the way back in like 2008, I think, maybe even 2007, that he claimed that he had worked on Mars. At one point, he'd leaked the name Solar Warden. Then he said, oh, I didn't say that, but actually he had. And he appears to have done a fairly similar job to the kind of thing that Corey Good was doing, except that in his case, he was predominantly a technician who was trained in how to repair certain types of sensitive equipment that they had on various bases that were off planet. So I had a really hard time at first believing him when he was talking about going to a military base in the UK, walking through this thing he called the corridor, taking an elevator, and when you go into the elevator, you're on Earth, and when the elevator doors open, you're on Mars. But this was a long time ago. This is over 10 years ago that I started to get all this now. And then it's other people coming in showing me the same kind of inside intel. They know the same pro words. They have the same program names. There's way too many things that line up. It's like everybody's part of some secret club, and they all know the same lingo, and they all know the same data. And it trips you out when you start seeing. I mean, people just now are starting to hear from Emery Smith. You, Jimmy, are one of the few people that have been able to get him to interview.
Right.
What did you think of Emery?
Well, we're going to talk about him after the break, and I do want to discuss him at length. He's a pretty fascinating guy, and just like you, there's another part to Emery. You know, I've spent a lot of time with him privately, and yeah. And on the phone, and he, he talks about everything, not just, you know, his history and employment, but he talks about life, and he talks about his family, he talks about his struggles, he talks about all the things that a normal, in other words, Emery is just a guy, you know, and his experiences and what he has gone through and the fact that he's stepping forward and talking about this. It's an amazing thing to talk about, but he's just normal like anybody else that you would talk to.
And exactly.
Now, this is like Emery, like Corey or others. We have to look at things, one of three ways, and possibly a fourth. One, Emery is attempting to make a buck, and it's all a lie, right? That's choice number one. Choice number two, he's a victim of some crazy MK Ultra program, and these are all downloads, memories that he believes are real. Scary thought. Three, it's all true, right? So those are your three choices. There are no gray areas or one where would blend into the other. And that's what we have to accept with Emery or Corey or others. But I'm going to say that with Emery, like Corey, Emery's a very grounded guy. Grounded.
I could subpoena five witnesses at least in a court of law to prove legally that Emery has been talking to me since 2009.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if he was trying to make money, then why did it take me 10 years to get this guy to come forward?
Right.
And everybody's hearing it backwards, right? They're hearing Emery now after we've already done Cosmic Disclosure and gotten most of Corey's testimony out. I didn't even hear from Corey until I'd already heard all the Emery stuff and had years to meditate on it. So I got it backwards, right? And then when Corey shows up, it's like, oh, this could explain why I know this guy who claims to have autopsied 3,000 different tissue samples of exobiological creatures. It's very, very strange. All these different things he was telling me about all the way back, 2009, 2010. Oh, yeah, we had aquatics, and we had insectoids, and we had mammalians, and we had reptilians. And we had beings that were somewhat energetic and somewhat physical, and we caught them in between in a protoplasmic state. And the scariest one was such and such. And then we had the Rockman. He's 70 feet tall, and most of the ETs are not as tall as we are, and they're all human. They all have a five-star pattern. I mean, I've been hearing this stuff for 10 years. And so I'm really excited that he has finally come forward, even though it happened under tragic circumstances with his life being threatened repeatedly.
Right.
This is a big story, and the deep state cannot put this genie back in the bottle. You're going to have to deal with it, guys. You're going to have to deal with the fact that we have brought out, we meaning this community, I'm not taking personal credit, we, this community, are bringing out information that is light years ahead of you guys admitting that you just have some reverse engineered craft from Roswell, that you've turned into things that can take a little cruise around our solar system. We are way beyond that. We have a very credible legal case that we can make that there is a program already in place that is thoroughly interacting with hundreds and hundreds of different races of extraterrestrials and has thoroughly colonized planets and moons all throughout our solar system and very likely outside our solar system as well. It's a huge story.
Let's take a break. Let's continue with David about Emery Smith right after this. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. This is Fade to Black. And, of course, you know what's funny, David? I wait for the music to cue, and then it's not there. And we have that that uncomfortable silence. We'll be right back. More David Wilcock right after this short break. Stay with me. I want to thank everybody for lighting up Twitter tonight and all of the messages over at OnStellar. I'm trying to keep up with them, but OnStellar is just amazing. Thank you in the chat rooms. David, back to Emery really quick, because I've got some other things I want to talk with you before we run out of time. How did Emery reach out to you the first time?
It was at a meeting in sometime early to mid 2009 with Dr. Stephen Greer at the Inn of the Seventh Ray in Topanga, California, which is a restaurant.
Right. Okay. And when he started to reveal some of these things, I mean, even for you, you've got to have squinty eyes, right? You know, and you're listening. How did you take it at first? Were you skeptical?
Well, that's a tough question, because for the listener to project themselves into my shoes, they would have to have already had over 10 years of talking to insiders that were at cosmic clearance 35 levels above the president and heard all kinds of weird stuff. So by the time I met Emery, I'd already had probably over 80 hours of conversation with Henry Deacon.
Mm-hmm.
I'd already heard about him going to Mars. I'd already heard about some very, very strange. I mean, there's still a lot of things he told me that I haven't gone public with. And of course, you're also told by all these people, oh, if you ever talked about this online, you get a knock on the door the next morning. It's so classified. It's so secret. They just take you out. And not to dinner, you know, but permanently out.
Right.
So,
well, I guess what I'm asking is, were you skeptical, and what was the turning point where you went, okay, all right.
You know, I feel as if I have a pretty good BS detector. And when somebody sits down with me and they start talking, there are certain things that I look for. And I don't want to necessarily say what they all are, because then these so-called LARPers, live action role play, you know, there's a lot of people that want to be fake insiders and make shit up.
Right.
We don't want to give them the tools on how to fool guys like me. So I'm not going to say everything, but I will just say that one of the best tools that anybody can employ is the same thing that they use in police interrogation. And that is, if you have somebody who's lying, and you ask them specific questions about little tiny details of what they're saying, typically their imagination is not going to fill in those blanks fast enough, and they'll basically try to whitewash it and dance around it and go back to what they were trying to tell you that they've already spent a lot of time structuring and thinking about.
That's right.
Whereas somebody who's telling you the truth, and I know, Jimmy, I've heard you use this all the time on your show, whether you know that you're doing it or whether it's intuitive, you do this. if you ask people seemingly nonsensical, off-topic questions that are kind of tangentially related to one little thing they said, and every single time you do that, you're double-clicking on a whole new world of stuff, and it just spills out of them like a fountain. And then you grab one little piece of 25 interesting things they say, and then you get another one of those fountains. And then you grab one piece of that, and you get another fountain, and another piece, and another fountain. And then this goes on for like 6 hours, and you're exhausted. But in that 6 hours, you have heard so much stuff that you could write 5 movies based on it and barely even get started. And it's all amazing. And so I'm looking at this guy, you know, Emery back in the day had a lot more PTSD about what had happened to him than he does now, because he did get beaten at one point when a colonel friend of his took him into a restricted area on the base to show him this weird octahedral shaped UFO, like a 2 pyramids back to back, basically this golden thing. And they got in trouble, and he actually got beaten and by other people on the base. And then he tried to go back to that area, and he was riding his bike, and he got hit with a directed energy weapon, got very, very sick. And so I'm literally watching this person having a full body trauma response as he's trying to tell me this story. And I mean shaking. I mean full on crying. Tears just streaming down his face, and not just the tears, but literally when people don't even have any control over it, and they got snot pouring out of their nose, and it's all down their lips, and it's dangling off of their chin. Mm-hmm. That's how much this dude was crying. Okay?
Right.
You can't fake that. I'm sorry. There are Hollywood actors who act pretty well, but you can't do that in the guise of a 6-hour brutalizing interrogation that I gave him. Which would be brutal if you were trying to lie, but easy if you're telling the truth.
Right.
And so, and my mind is going, how in the world do I wrap my head around this? 3,000 different extraterrestrial races? And so I started to draw some conclusions. And one of the conclusions I drew was, okay, let's say that Henry Deacon is telling the truth. Let's say that there's bases on Mars already that we're not being told about. Which is actually pretty easy to understand if you see that Roswell was a working craft that they got running, which means they could fly anywhere around the solar system they want. And then if they can go there, they don't even need to bring anything with them. They could just start building structures out of native materials, just like what might have happened here with the pyramids. Those could have been extraterrestrials using large blocks of stone to build these really cool monuments. They didn't need to bring anything with them except their ship.
Right.
So if that happened, if we've been lied to about Roswell for 70 years and they've been able to fly around, of course they're going to settle on Mars. Of course they're going to settle on the moon. Of course they're going to settle on the moons of Jupiter, the moons of Saturn, the Oort cloud, the Kuiper belt, the asteroid belt. Of course. And it's offensive to us because it's such a big lie. It's a lie that is so vast that it seems to be beyond comprehension. But yet somehow I'm getting thrown in with these people, or they're finding me. And because I've already heard things from others, it's like when you're in Boy Scouts and you trade patches back and forth, right? This is the same thing, except I'm trading information. And so as long as I have interesting stuff to tell other people, they're going to keep talking. And I keep learning more and more. And when I'm interested in things, I remember them very precisely. So I could have heard something 15 years ago, and I'll remember it when somebody's telling me a story, and I'll be like, oh, my God, yeah. And isn't the code name such and such? And, oh, yeah, yeah, how did you know that? Well, yeah, this guy told me back in Delmarva when I was driving up the I-95 from Virginia to New York. That's when I first heard that, you know. That's the kind of stuff that would happen. So I'm trying to think about this, and I'm saying, okay, we got bases on Mars, we got bases on the moon, we got bases throughout our solar system. And all these ETs are all over the place. You know, Henry Deacon was telling me that there were, at the time that he was there, which was, I guess, in the 80s and early 90s, there were 200,000, quote-unquote, personnel working in his base on Mars. And 10,000 of those personnel were born on Earth. So I'm trying to wrap my head around that. And then I'm trying to wrap my head around, okay, what happens when cultures get together based on Earth's history is they trade. But nobody's going to want paper money, and they probably don't even care about gold, because there's plenty of asteroids you can mine that are just solid gold or solid diamonds even. You know, some of the interiors of these planets are all diamonds. So like gas planets, for example, because of the pressure.
Right.
So what do you trade? What's considered valuable, right? Information. And what's the best type of information? Actual bodies of beings that these various ETs have recovered in their wars. They fight somebody, they shoot the ship, they bring back the ship. They say, we'll trade you this wreckage and we'll trade you the bodies inside. And so one of the things that Emery started telling me back in 2009 is, hey man, it's weird, but like a lot of times the craft have DNA and they're cloned off of the body of the being inside. So a ship is actually custom made to order off of your own DNA. And it's an integration of technology and biology. Well, nobody else had been saying that before, and now people are hearing that, and for everybody else, it's new. So for me, I'm saying, okay, you got this guy at Kirtland Air Force Base in New Mexico, not too far from Area 51. He's just one grunt working this job that probably hundreds and hundreds of other guys have done, and just in the matter of whatever it was, 3-4 years, he autopsies 3,000 different specimens, some of which were just, you know, little tissue samples, but a lot of which, I think he said over 1,000, 1,500, something like that, were actual intact or largely intact bodies. No two looked alike. And so I start interrogating him. And this was, again, we're talking 10, 9, 8 years ago, because we had several conversations. And the degree of specific information that this guy was giving me is what everybody's getting a taste of now, like if they listen to your interview with him on the show. I mean, it's mind-blowing.
Right.
And I've hardly ever heard him say the same thing twice. There's a lot of stuff that he told me 10 years ago that he still hasn't said, just because you got to ask the right question. And if we were ever going to actually take the time, we literally have 3,000 different samples to talk through. And he has vivid memory of many of them, what they looked like, what their organ systems were like, what made them similar to humans, what made them different from humans. Some of them, a lot of them look a lot like us. A lot of them, really, we wouldn't be too uncomfortable if we met these people. It would be very comfortable. But then there's other ones that look really, really strange. And so I think that what's happening is that there's hundreds and hundreds of Emerys. And they are essentially taking the payment that we're getting, we meaning this secret space program. We're getting these bodies as payment for technology that we're developing on these off-planet bases that we've been back engineering from all this stuff that everybody gives us. Oh, I got this really weird machine. It's like a sphere, and it levitates off the ground. And, you know, this was very valuable to the people that we got it from. Will you take this? Yes. So one of the things that Emery said that I didn't even hear until we were literally interviewing for Cosmic Disclosure was that during the time that he was in this, which was in the 1990s, there was so much foreign technology, and that's in quotation marks, there was so much foreign technology coming in that was new that they were getting something new every day. Every day. They have an unfamiliar technological artifact that could potentially change everything about life on Earth, and they're getting them every day, and they've got whole teams of scientists who've never lived on Earth and never will live on Earth who are working on this stuff and are trying to figure out how it works and tear it apart, and they're building things that are useful, and you got a whole bunch of ETs from all over the galaxy coming here to buy our stuff. Because even though we're very spiritually low on the totem pole, it turns out we're excellent when it comes to building machines. And so a really big part for me of why Disclosure is so important is that with Disclosure comes the kind of technology that Emery was describing with the cafeteria. The cafeteria story is one of the craziest stories he's got. Because he's there on Kirtland Air Force Base, he goes into this cafeteria. And you, just like what Corey was saying, just like what Henry Deacon told me, just like what Pete Peterson told me, just like what I heard from Colonel Bob Dean or Sergeant Bob Dean, it prints the meal. It prints the meal, and then it flash cooks it for you. It's like the best food you've ever had in your whole life. And then he sits down at the table, and the table is a smart table. It's got graphic displays on it. You can wave your hands over it. There's different gestures for things. If you gesture one way, the mustard and the ketchup and the mayonnaise packets come up, and you can pick one of those, and then you wave your hand, it goes away. You gesture over here, you get your fork and knife. You gesture over here, you get a napkin that just materializes out of the table. Really weird, great stuff. And I thought Emery was a lost cause, and I'm not in any way trying to insult him, and he would back me up on this. I wistfully, there's so many times, I mean, I'm thinking now 2011, 2012, where I sat down with him and I just wished that that conversation had been recorded because it was so frickin' mind-blowing. And then everybody's out there saying, oh, well, not everybody, but a lot of people, oh, David's making all this up. He doesn't have any insiders. This is a joke. You know, he's just trying to sell a story. He's just trying to get clicks on the internet. But wait a minute. Now we got this guy who's come out. He's vouching for me. He's vouching for being my friend. You can prove that he was working with Dr. Greer for over 10 years as the vice president of CSETI. He was on these CE5s, Close Encounter of the Fifth Kind, where they're actually calling in UFOs and having contact with them. And it's because of the background that he had that he was able to be involved in that stuff and that he was good at it. So it's a groundbreaking story. And it got picked up by mainstream media recently. Jordan Sather did a video with Emery, and Daily Star picked it up, and they linked to it, and they're starting to talk about it. So we are winning this war. And full disclosure is a lot bigger than just finding out, oh, well, the Greys are real, and they're from, you know, Zeta Reticuli, right? That was where a lot of the UFO community was maybe 10, 12, 15 years ago.
That's right.
We're talking about thousands of extraterrestrials, dude. We're talking about thousands of cultures in which you could dedicate your whole life to studying the history of one extraterrestrial race, because that history may go on for tens of thousands of years. And the whole of Earth history doesn't really get interesting until about 3000 BC. So we only have maybe 5000 years tops.
That's it.
And we don't really get good records until the time of Greece and Rome. So holy smokes, if you've got people that have been around for 10,000 years, 100,000 years, and they have a whole history of all the planets that they went to and all the people they met and the musical instruments they played and the songs that were written and their CD collection.
Well, yeah, but David, that has to be the way that it is. We're talking about, a trillion stars. And,
yeah.
And when you wrap your head around that number in the Milky Way and how many planets now are associated with those stars, and
NASA's saying 40 billion Earth-like planets in
40
our galaxy. 40 billion.
So 3,000 tissue samples. Let's say it's 3,000 individual species. Well, right. So what? That's a small number.
It's nothing.
It's nothing. And I've said it forever till I'm blue in the face. You need to wrap your mind around that. We are only here right now. This last 2,000 years is as thin as a cell of the paint on your wall in the span of time. It's insignificant, and to understand that other species out there, other civilizations, if they are just a fraction younger than us, right, more developed, we're talking about a million years of development. Look what we have done in the last 100 years. And you have to look at it in those terms. And there's no other way to look at it. There isn't. There isn't another way to look at it. These are the facts. So
the old school skeptics would invoke this dreaded Drake equation and say, oh, there's 2.15 intelligent civilizations in the galaxy. Well, I'd love to see what a point 15 looks like, right?
Right, right.
But that's all been blown out the door.
It's
now, now we know Mars was once like Earth. That was announced by NASA 2012, that it had a mile and a half deep ocean across half of its surface, right?
Right.
You got the face on Mars. You got the pyramids on Mars. There was an ancient civilization there. There's no question.
That's right.
And that's just in our solar system. There's all kinds of weird stuff when you start looking at NASA pictures, the stuff that they didn't edit properly. There's all kinds of weird structures that shouldn't be there that suggest either something ancient or something current. Either way doesn't matter. The fact is we're not alone. And it's a much, much bigger story than Grays from Zeta Reticuli doing abductions and giving you an anal probe. I mean, ufology has totally moved beyond that stuff. It's much, much bigger than that.
What are you going to be speaking about? We're already at the end of the show. I can't believe we blew through 2.5 hours, and I could go for another 2.5 with you. But what are you going to be speaking about a contact in the desert this year? It's in 2 weeks. Can you believe it?
I know. It's coming on really, really fast. Before I get to that, let me just also say I'm doing my first all-weekend event in Colorado at a gorgeous, gorgeous hotel in Estes Park, which is like the Banff of Colorado. It's incredible mountains, incredible lake, 70-foot-tall glass window behind me as I'm lecturing. Amazing hotel I found. So that's the first time in 5 years that I'm doing the grand download where I take all of this stuff and I drop it on you over the course of like a 17-hour lecture broken up into chunks. And so that's available on my website, divinecosmos.com. So I encourage people to check that out. Another thing is that I'm doing an event that's going to have Corey Good, Emery Smith, and a lot of other secret space program whistleblowers called Dimensions of Disclosure. And that's happening in August, also in Colorado.
I'm going to be there.
Yeah, yeah. That's good. I was trying to remember if you were there or not, and I'm glad that you are, because it's really great that you're going to be there. So my point is, despite these crazy death threats that we've had, despite these crazy, you know, like Emery almost has his dog stolen, gets his dog stolen from the dog, almost dies. 3 weeks later, somebody hits his other dog with a car, and the dog dies. And they threaten him and say, "You will keep your effing mouth shut." And he still came forward. He's still talking. So this is real. This is a real war. This is not a joke. We're not in this for money. We're not in this for fame or ego. We're trying to get this technology broken out to the planet. Contact in the Desert is the front line of that battle. And that is it is the premier UFO event there is. It's got more names. It's got more speakers. It's an embarrassment of riches. No matter how far you go through, you'll never be able to see everybody because there's like five people talking at once. So you get to choose what you're going to see. And there's been some controversy about the fact that the venue changed, but this new venue is really nice. I went to Indian Hills myself. I drove in. I saw the whole town. It's right next to this gorgeous mountain range that you can go up and hike in. The speakers are amazing. So I personally have two different panels. They're just amazing people that I'm going to be fostering group discussion with. And my lectures are focusing on the secret space program and ascension. So I get into things like the five alliance groups, these different levels of the alliance that are working to get us the truth. I'm going to get into the scientific proof of ascension. I'm definitely going to be talking about this new solar flash that happened. It's a freak show. It's an amazing opportunity to meet like-minded people so that we're not just sitting here listening to the radio, which is good in its own way, but we also need to convene. We need to have community. We need to see each other, meet each other, dance together, listen to music, have fun. You know, and that's what this is. It's a circus. It's a festival. It's a great gathering, just like we had in Woodstock, where all those people were freaks, and they didn't think they had anybody else like them, and all of a sudden there's 200,000 of them in Bethel, New York. This is the same kind of deal. It's that event that you don't want to miss. So I would recommend hit all three. Hit Contact, hit my event. When you want to get the full download, you want to get the big, big story, and hit Dimensions of Disclosure, because they're all events that might only happen once and might never happen again. You know, and they're all extremely life-transforming things to go through. It's something you'll always remember.
That's right. You know, you make friends, lifelong memories, you gather knowledge, and that's what it's about. And you can always go up to David and take a selfie. Hey, man, thank you so much. Thank you so much, my friend. And we'll talk over the next couple of days, but always just another great conversation, David. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jimmy. This has been incredible. It's great to talk to you.
It's always the best.
You're a great radio host.
You're a better guest. Thank you, David. Behave and be well.
I can't behave, but I'll be well.
I'll see you in 2 weeks.
All right, buddy.